recording and start interpretation. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome to today's at-large ad hoc working group on IANA transition and ICANN accountability on Wednesday, the 20th of January at 1600 UTC. On today's call, we have Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Jean-Jacques Subrenin, Barak Otieno, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Leon Sanchez, Gordon Chilcott, and Sébastien Bachelet. Sean Ojedeji will be joining us in about 5 minutes. No participants on the Spanish channel and no apologies noted as of yet. From staff, we have myself, Gisela Gruber, and our Spanish interpreters are Veronica and David. If I could please just remind everyone to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes and also to allow the interpreters to identify you on the Spanish channel. Thank you, and over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Gisela. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. Have we missed anybody in the roll call? It appears not. Okay, so the roll call is complete. Today we have our usual mix of CWG IANA and CCWG accountability updates, as well as a small update from the IANA coordination group. We'll first have to adopt the agenda. There's just so little to talk about in IANA coordination group and CWG IANA stewardship. I thought perhaps we could move those item 4 and 5 before agenda item 3. Are there any objections or any comments on this? I see a green tick from Jean-Jacques Subrenin, so no comments, no objections. The agenda is adopted with item 4 and 5 before item 3. Let's move swiftly to the review of our action items from our last meeting. And our last meeting, I believe, was not on the 13th of January. I think it was the 15th of January. It was the Friday call. So there's a little error in the agenda here. But needless to say, the Friday call, if you click on the Wednesday call, you'll find out that it says next call will take place on Friday. And it did. And on Friday, there were no action items, which means we can move swiftly to agenda item number 3. Now, when we are in agenda item number 3, that's the ICG, the IANA Coordination Group update. For this, we have Jean-Jacques Subrenin, who is on the call. So Jean-Jacques, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques. I hesitate to mention anything because I believe I've already reported to this group a few days ago. But in any case, there was a call of the ICG at teleconference a few days ago. That was on the 13th of January. And the main decision taken there was that the ICG would not convene in the margins of ICANN 55 in Marrakesh. And therefore, although there may be several members of the ICG attending ICANN 55 in another capacity, the ICG will not convene as such in the Moroccan city. We will have, though, at least one call before that and, of course, shortly afterwards. For the rest, I think there have been several discussions I have listened in to or perhaps made a few remarks at over the past few days in the at-large community, so I don't think it's useful for me to go through the list of questions that some of the ICG members ask themselves, about global public interest, the ICANN missions, human rights, consumer trust, IRP, and all that. That has been debated, and of course we've had very detailed accounts from Alan and others, which we're grateful. So I'm afraid that's all. It was the announcement that ICG will not be meeting in Marrakesh. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. Are there any questions or comments? Okay. No questions or comments. So thanks for this update. Next is agenda item 5, which is the CWG INS stewardship transition update. And to my knowledge, there hasn't been any real movement from the last call that we have had. I gather a lot of people are waiting for the discussions that are taking place in the CCWG accountability. There was a blog post that was it published, blog volume 12, I believe, an update on INS stewardship discussions, and that has a full details of the full spiel of what happened and where we are. And there is now, I guess, some work going on when it comes down to implementation work of things. Now, unfortunately, the next CWG INA call will take place tomorrow. So if we do have a call later on this week, perhaps on Friday, then we will have more updates about this. I don't really have anything else to report on that. Alan or anybody else who is in CWG INA, do you have any other anything else to add?
Nothing that I'm aware of.
Okay, so I think then we can move on and go to agenda item number 3, CCWG accountability. For this we have Alan Greenberg, who I believe has a presentation with the current status. Over to you, Alan.
I'm afraid I can't present since I'm not listed as a participant in this meeting.
Who are you?
Oops. Apparently I have to present now. If we could put the presentation up, please. And I'll let people scroll for themselves if they care. What I'm going to be doing is going over the current status. Some of it repeats what was done at the last time, but I don't know to what extent we have any new people on this call. We're losing it. We seem to be losing the interest of the community on these calls. We're not having nearly as many people as we had in earlier ones. I'm not quite sure what that means. Maybe this is just becoming a boring topic now. In any case,
it's because we're paid to do this. The community isn't. That's why.
Ah.
Are we not paid? Oh, okay. Sorry.
You may be paid to do this. My check hasn't come yet. All right, just going through it quickly. Recommendation number 1, enhance community powers. Our position was we were okay. The only possible issue still left outstanding is there were comments by some groups that the weighting essentially of ACs should be lower than SOs. That has not yet been discussed. I think the chances of it being acted on are exceedingly small, but it is still an issue that's pending. And as normal, if anyone has any issues to raise, raise your hand or call out. If I don't notice it, someone let me know. Recommendation number 2, the community powers. We had been concerned that the threshold under some conditions for removing the board and possibly for rejecting budgets on ANA actions would be lowered from 4 ACSOs to 3. That has been addressed. We also had a minor concern over the wording of the potential wording in the bylaw, which implied that there was absolute certainty of 120 days for replacing interim board members if the whole board was removed. Since this is not something likely to happen and not clear what the remedy would be if indeed we missed it, I'm not sure how important it is, but it is still an outstanding issue that hasn't been addressed.
Alan, it's Olivier. Just wanting to jump in here.
Yep.
Are you going to open the floor after each recommendation to find out if there are any questions, or do you want anybody to interrupt you, or how do you want to?
Yes, I said please put up your hand or interrupt if you have any comments.
Okay. Well, I have a question on recommendation 1. You mentioned possible issues. effort to reduce AC waiting. Is this has this become a concrete element? I mean, has this materialized significantly now?
It is among the comments made that have not been addressed formally by the CCWG. Since I'm assuming the process is we must have some level of discussion on any substantive issues that have raised, I'm assuming it will still pop up eventually. That's my assumption. It may be wrong, but that is what I'm presuming. If it never pops up, then I'm happy because we don't want the change made. But at this point,
you're
I have
correct,
to assume Alan. It might. Sorry?
You're correct, Alan. You are correct, Alan. I'm sure Thanks. Once things like a GNSO letter comes in, it will then get onto agendas. But there's a number of things that we really can't deal with in a fulsome way until we have both the GNSO and GAC input.
Correct.
So it is the intention, I can assure you, for absolutely every comment to be dealt with.
For those who participate in the CCWG meetings, there will be pink comments if we do not discuss it. I will be cryptic and force you to come and join a meeting if you want to know what that means. Back to item number three, because I believe two is addressed. And Sebastian agrees on the pink comments, apparently. On recommendation number three, the dividing between fundamental and standard bylaws, there has been no discussion on that. There was a discussion on whether the fact that ICANN is has its main office in California, whether that should become a fundamental bylaw, and that was rejected at this point. Number four, ensuring the community decision-making powers. We had expressed concern. Yes, go ahead. Olivier, go ahead. Sorry, on number three, I presume.
Yes, please. Yeah, Alan, it's Olivier Capin-Leblanc speaking. You mentioned the bylaw change for the office to be maintained in California or in the United States. The GNSO, as you know, has been discussing this. We're still waiting for, I believe we're still waiting for a statement from the GNSO and whether this will make it into the GNSO statement. The question is, if that is the case, since the discussion has already been had to reject this, is there a chance that the group will revisit it again, or is that really now a done deal?
I would think anything is possible. Remember, although we are waiting for the formal GNSO position, we do have the positions of all the stakeholder and constituency groups within the GNSO, and I'm presuming that's where among perhaps other places it was raised. The rationale was this recommendation that it not be a fundamental bylaw has been there since the very first report, and to change it now does not seem to be warranted, given that there were not strong comments before, or at least not none that were addressed. And I personally, my own view is the whole thing is rather moot. It is a California corporation. You cannot change the bylaws with words to change the fact that it's actually incorporated in California. You would have to incorporate a new corporation somewhere else to alter that. And should ICANN ever move away and not have its headquarters in California, that's not something that's going to be done quietly in the middle of the night with no one noticing. So I really don't think it's a major issue. And if the community believed that it was so important, then they have the ability to reject the bylaw that would cause its being changed. So I really think it's icing on a cake, and I don't think it's particularly relevant. So I'm not very concerned with it. But could it come up again? Sure. Anything could be reopened. Hand still up, Olivier? No. All right. Recommendation number four, we expressed concern with liability, that is, if we take some action to remove a board member, is there a chance that the board member could sue ICANN, the organization, or more important, the individuals who made the statements because they have been harmed, whether it's harm, simply defamation, harmed saying they are their ability to now seek employment is impacted because this action has been taken against them. The CCWG reaction was to request or to recommend that there be pre-seating letters waiving the right to take such action and possibly that ICANN indemnify certain individuals. At one point there was a talk of identifying only the chairs. The current talk is all members of the ACs or councils or SO councils. The board has unilaterally rejected the waiver in a pre-seating letter. They have not come back yet and confirmed whether they're looking at indemnification. Now, at some level, since our position originally was it's not clear we really want to be able to remove board members, maybe it's okay that we'll never have the nerve to do it because of risk. But I think it's rather inappropriate to put things in bylaws which will then never be exercised because of a gotcha like this. So I think it really needs to be addressed. No comments? Seeing no hands, then we go on to number five. Five is the changes to Article 1 of the bylaws, the mission, core values, and commitments. And here we have had substantial discussions. The first one is essentially on the wording of the mission of ICANN and the discussions on whether ICANN should have the ability to put certain restrictions on contracts, whether the contracted party should be able to add things, whether the clauses that are in the contracts that were not negotiated, that were not done through a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process, and there are many, because there are vestigial parts of the contracts that have been around since the beginning of ICANN. There are things in the various contracts that have been negotiated between parties, and all of those potentially could have been invalidated under various draft wording that we've seen over the last year, or certainly over the last number of months. We're still currently discussing it. There is very widely differing views. We even have splits now among those who were advocating very strong rules controlling ICANN are now not necessarily agreeing with each other. They're both advocating strong rules, but not agreeing on the same rules. We seem to be getting farther apart, not closer together. The issue has been on the board list as well. They didn't have particular words, but they basically said we should not be talking about things in detail. The whole playing field has changed now because the lawyers came back with an interesting comment. Up until now, we have been regularly saying things like, we'll simply give the lawyers instructions on how to draft the bylaws, and then they will come up with the words which, and I'll facetiously add, magically address all of our concerns. The lawyers have come back and said we're dreaming, that if we can't come up with simple definitions of what we're talking about, the lawyers are not going to be able to either. The more details we go into, the more complex and unuser-friendly the bylaws become, and the more subject they actually become to interpretation. If we start putting in detailed lists, someone will find a loophole. And they are recommending we put in general principles, which will then be subject to interpretation by the board and by other bodies, such as the IRP. We have not really acted on that yet, but that comment, I think, is a real changer of the whole discussion. But it's not clear where it's going to go at this point. But it was refreshing to hear from the lawyers that they're not going to be able to do magic and come up with concise words to replicate what we could not describe in words ourselves. Comments, questions on that one? Seeing none. The next one on slide 7 is the change that the current bylaws say, where feasible and appropriate, we will depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a competitive environment. The lead-in phrase, where feasible and appropriate, was deleted. We have objected to this. It has not yet been discussed. This is an issue that Becky Burr has felt passionate about, and it's going to be a difficult discussion. So we'll see where that one goes. Yes, Olivier.
Yeah, thanks very much for this, Alan. It's Olivier Clapin-Ablon speaking. Just two things. First, I happen to have received the input from the GNSO Council in my mailbox just an hour ago, so I'm going through it now, and I might have to come back to some of the recommendations over time. But first, just on looking at recommendation number 5, the mission and IRP, validating contract terms and so on, how advanced is the discussion now? I have noticed there's some discussion on the PICs now as well, public interest commitments, or is that not part of this?
Public interest commitments have been an example of terms in current contracts which were not developed through a bottom-up process, and in some cases might be referring to things like content which are outside of ICANN's formal mission. So they are the poster child for the kinds of things that could be invalidated if we're not careful. Now,
okay.
It is not clear if there were a second round of GTLDs or a new round to come. It's not clear we could use PICs unless they were recommended by the future GNSO PDP recommendations, the ones, the one we're just starting out on. So that's going to be an interesting discussion within that PDP group on whether things like PICs should be allowed or not. Clearly, we will have some input into that process, but that's up for grabs. But right now, you ask, how far is the discussion? As I said, I think we're getting farther apart, not closer together. But the lawyer's input, I think, will have some substantive impact on how we go forward. But it is not at all clear right now. Does that address what you were saying, what you were asking?
Yes, thank you very much, Alan. It's Olivier Clapin-Ablon speaking. I'm reading the GNSO recommendation as we speak, and it seems to be saying here, qualified support with divergent positions and conditions. So we might see a lot more discussion coming out of that. The GNSO Council seems to be wishing, they have divergent opinions within the stakeholder groups and constituencies, and so that might land again on the CCWG.
Yep. All right. Slide number 8. This is one where we called them out on the recommendation that we use the terms that ICANN must preserve and enhance the neutral and judgment-free operation of the DNS, since the operation of the DNS is a worldwide effort with millions of incarnations. It was not clear how ICANN could do that, and especially since we know many of those incarnations are not neutral and judgment-free. The wording that the NTIA had requested was quite different. That is, a neutral and judgment-free administration of the technical DNS and IANA functions, and I believe there's been a general acceptance to revert to the IANA words and not the new ones that were invented. Questions, comments? Seeing none, on to item 8. This is the one on consumer trust. We had claimed that the Section 3 of the AOC, which mentions consumer trust, was a general reference and not restricted to new GTLDs. An action of the CCWG was to ask the NTIA, what did you mean when those words were inserted? and they came back and said it was just in reference to new GTLDs. Now, my personal position has always been the word should stand on their own, and I believed it was a wider inclusion. But in the face of almost everyone else in the CCWG disagreeing with us and the NTIA saying that's not what we meant, I don't think we have any real grounds to demand that the words be inserted, given that that's an expansion of the mandate of ICANN, which is not currently in the bylaws. Now, it's something which is currently accepted as a responsibility of ICANN, but not backed up by words in the bylaws as such. There is also the ability of the CCT, of the Consumer Trust review team, for saying that, you know, there's a reason that this should be added to the bylaws, but that may or may not happen in the future. But at this point, I don't think we're on strong grounds, given that there has never been an intent to really change the bylaws to add new things to it. Now, of course, the people that believe we have to add terms to restrict ICANN's ability to go rogue and to have mission creep will have no qualms about adding things to the bylaws. But we are fighting them tooth and nail on those issues, so I don't think we can take the reverse position on this one. Sebastian. Sorry, I heard two people talking. Okay, I think one of them is Olivier.
Yeah, I think it's Sean want to speak after me, I guess.
All right, then go ahead. Go ahead, Sebastian, and Sean afterwards.
Yeah. Thank you. Comment. It's that it's quite interesting that we ask NTIA, but we didn't ask the one from ICANN who writes this document. They all see it's a document signed by two organizations. I was very interesting to see the process. We ask NTIA. I would like very much to have the position of the one from ICANN who wrote this document. It could have been a different interpretation. Thank you.
True. He's not involved in these processes and not necessarily readily accessible. So
He's no longer with ICANN.
No, that's what I just said, I thought.
You said these processes, which could have been interpreted as just these.
Okay, sorry. He's not with ICANN and not involved in any of these accountability discussions. And besides, I would have a high degree of certainty that those clauses were pretty well dictated by the NTIA and not things that ICANN volunteered. But I could be wrong on that. In any case, I don't think we're in a strong position to defend a change in the bylaws in light of our strong statements that we do not believe other things should be changed in similar ways. So I think this is one we're going to have to eat. But clearly there can be more discussion over it. Shun, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Shun. Thank you, Alan. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned something about the CCT may come back later to propose a change to the bylaw. Am I right to assume that this proposal will actually go through the whatever process is accepted within the CCWG to update the bylaw? Is that correct?
I'm sorry. You're going to say that again. I didn't understand what you were asking.
Okay, my question is, you mentioned something about the CCT may, that's the team, the review team, the CCT policy may come back to recommend a change in relation to the consumer trust topic. My question then is there any connection between the CCT, RT, and the current CWG efforts? And then if he recommend any change to the bylaw, am I right to conclude that that change will actually go through the process that is the bylaw changing process that is being recommended by the CWG?
Well, there is no connection between them directly. Whether it would whether a bylaw change recommended by the CCT review team would go through the processes we're talking about depends on whether the processes we're talking about are implemented by that time. The CCT team, well, I'm presuming, will work for somewhere around a year. They will deliver their recommendations perhaps at the end of this calendar year. The board will think about them for a while and will start implementing the recommendations should they choose to go ahead with them sometime around middle of 2017. So if the accountability work goes ahead, and that's an if, then chances are the new bylaws would be in place and whatever process the new bylaws have for changing bylaws would be in place. The processes for changing non-fundamental bylaws are not changing. They are staying unchanged, although the community would have the ability of rejecting them after the board approves them. So there's really no change being recommended in non-fundamental bylaws. And, of course, whether the new processes, whatever they are followed will depend on the timing. But there is no direct connection between a review team recommendation and our work. Hopefully, I'd like to think we're going to be long gone by then.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Then we're on to recommendation number 6, reaffirming ICANN's commitment to human rights. The ALAC position was we were okay, but we had some concern with the hard deadline that was in the draft motion. I think there's been general acceptance that bylaws, we should not put hard deadlines in bylaws. So I think our concern was addressed, but the current wording is still under significant discussion. There are proposals at this point. The board has basically said, if I can summarize, that there should be no bylaw, regardless of the words, until we have the framework. It has been suggested we could have a bylaw which is not effective until, that is, it's not come into place until the framework is approved, which would mean the bylaw becomes active without having to change the bylaws. That's not an uncommon thing. We have seen similar things that certain bylaws are put in place and triggered by external events. The wording that was proposed and the example I have on the slide number 10 is one of the things that has concerned people or some people. And if you read that, it says adopt adjusted bylaws as part of Workstream 1 to clarify that it can be enforced or used in an IRP once the framework of interpretation is approved. And parenthetically, it says it becomes effective after. Those are two different things. It's not clear that you can put in bylaws that something is in place but cannot be used by a court or or an IRP. It's not clear that they would have to follow those. Therefore, there was concern that the parenthetical is saying something different than the main text. That can easily be fixed. From my perspective, putting in place a bylaw which does not kick in until the framework of interpretation is approved by the board sounds a lot like not having a bylaw until, not inserting the bylaw until then. The board seems to feel that having it there has some onus on it, and this is still in discussion. We have recommended that our lawyers approach their lawyers and try to understand what the difference is. And that's where we stand right now. And Tijani has his hand up.
Thank you very much, Alan. Tijani speaking. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Very much. If you remember, I raised in this group the issue that the board expressed now I said that we agreed inside the group to address the human rights issue at a very high level in Workstream 1. At the beginning, we decided not to address it in Workstream 1 at all. But under the insistence of some, we finished by accepting to address it and to have a mention, a very high level mention about human rights without more detail. And we decided to address the human rights issue completely in Workstream 2. Because we were not sure that everyone has the same interpretation of how human rights can apply to the mission of ICANN. My personal fear, big fear, is that it will be used to prevent some TLDs to be delegated. Because they can say, because they come from the bad people from Korea, so they have against human rights, we will not give them the TLD if we insert it in the bylaw like this without explaining clearly how it can be applied, the human rights commitment. So, we arrived to a situation where we decided to form a group to study it and to come up with the language that we can use in our final report. It seems that inside the group we decided not to insert it in the final report, to insert it in the bylaw. So it will be a commitment in the bylaws without defining the rules, if you want. You say we will play football and there is no rules, so you can do whatever you want, which is not acceptable, for me at least. I made a comment as a person on this point. Afralo also made the same comment, and I saw on the public comments that there are other people who commented on it. In my point of view, the CCWG asked our lawyers if we go on transition without doing anything about human rights in the bylaw, what is the consequence? And the lawyers, after studying that, said no consequence. It is documented. So now, we want to include in the bylaw commitment to human rights without having the right interpretation, which is, in my point of view, very, very bad. That's the point that the board also raised, and I think that right now we didn't reach any consensus on that, and I don't see how we will finish with the consensus. The 3C that Alan just mentioned, the insertion in the bylaw of this language, and saying that this will not be applied till the frame of interpretation will be available in Workstream 2, is, as Alan explained, and I agree with him 100%, is not it cannot be since it is in the bylaw, it is applicable. You cannot say it is not applicable. So this is my fear. This is my problem. I raised it in the CCWG, I raised it here, and I wrote it in the comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. To be clear, what I said was the 3C, with the section that's been called 3C, which is the example I have on slide 10, I said the two parts of the statement conflict with each other. It is possible to have a bylaw which is not effective. That is, it does not become effective until a certain date or until a certain external action happens. That is something that I believe is possible. It is not possible to say the bylaw is effective but cannot be used in an IRP or a court. That's the distinction between the first half and the second half of the sentence. So my understanding is it is possible to have a bylaw which is not effective until some event happens. ICANN has used bylaws like that in the past. Now, at this point, the board is saying that they do not believe that that is acceptable, that it must be nothing present at all. And there is currently a discussion between the lawyers going on to try to identify just what the subtle differences are. In terms of the position taken by the ALAC, our formal position in to the third proposal was the draft words were acceptable. You'll notice there's a red question mark there because we did have some people, and Tijani was one of them, who believed that that was not the best solution. But we did have general agreement that it was an acceptable solution. The concern about a human rights bylaw without understanding what it implies has been discussed since the very start of the discussion. Certainly I was one of the people who raised that among others. But at this point, I'm not sure we should be debating whether it's right or wrong. We can all participate within the CCWG, and CCWG members certainly have the ability of saying they don't agree. But I'm not sure this is the forum that we should be using to try to decide which is the right answer right now, unless there's an overwhelming belief that we answered something, that our answer was incorrect in the formal reply we gave, in which point we need to correct that, correct the public record. But I haven't heard that as a widespread comment at this point. Anything else on the human rights issue?
Yeah, this is Shane for the record.
Go ahead.
I'd like to say thank you. Okay, thank you, Alan. I think I want the first question to you is you mentioned something about about the two differences between the between putting the statement in the bylaw and then there was a specific way you said it that it can be used by IRP or court and it's ineffective. Is there a difference between if something is said to be effective subject to this or something is said to be effective by this particular date? It seems to mean that it means that it cannot be used in the court of law or by any IRP. That's what the effectiveness means. That is, if the trigger action has not happened, then it means that the particular text is ineffective and cannot be used. So you seem to be saying there's a difference between that. I'd like to know what the difference is. Second comment I have is that ALAC perhaps may want to, two, three options have been laid down of A, B, C. ALAC may want to actually specifically indicate what each of the options they prefer. I don't think we specifically said that in our comments that was submitted. I think now that the option three is also listed, perhaps there could be a formal view or opinion by the members of ALAC. I don't know whether this has been done already. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to clarify. On the last point, whether we prefer A, B, or C, I and several other people at the last call said that the question is wrong. The wording in the A, B, C, as has been pointed out, C had conflicts within itself. It was not clear what people meant by the wording in the proposal. So there were a number of people from different constituencies and areas that said, if you're going to ask us to pick among different options, show us the option. Don't make indirect references to it because people are interpreting things differently. So that's where we stand right now, and we're waiting for specific wording to come back from the CCWG, from the chairs or whoever's authoring this section, to say, choose among the following, but be really clear and not have indirect references. So I didn't see the purpose of asking this group, do you prefer A, B, and C, when I and other people have already said that those are confusing, conflicting answers that people are interpreting differently. So we will talk about which we prefer, but only when we have some concrete words to look at. To go back
Alan,
to the...
this is Leon.
Sorry?
This is Leon, Alan. Can I just say a word?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. This is Leon Sanchez. And yes, you are right, that language will be coming today. I am responsible for drafting that language. And just to give you a heads up on how it will look like, it will be exactly the same text as in the third draft proposal, but the difference is that in the transitional pilot that is being proposed, it will be clarified that the suggested bylaw on human rights will remain dormant until the framework of interpretation is actually developed. So that way, it will not be in effect until the framework of interpretation is actually developed, and therefore, it could not be used to initiate any kind of faction or IRP based on the dormant bylaw on human rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Leon. That alluded to Sean's first question, but I'll try to be specific. The difference between the two halves of the 3C, the part that is given as an example, is the first, the text says, adopt the bylaw, but it cannot be used for enforcement. That still means it's a bylaw. ICANN has an obligation to address human rights, but until there's a framework of interpretation, it cannot be used in a court or an IRP. That's the part that is, I think, and I'm not a lawyer, is the really strong part. You cannot say this bylaw is in effect. It is an obligation on ICANN's books, but say it can't be used in a court. That's the part that's the conflict. Either the bylaw is in effect and is a regular bylaw, or it is not in effect until some trigger action happens to cause it to be correct. And Leon has clarified that the next version we look at will say something like that. That still doesn't address the board's concern, and Tijani's, I think, that it should not even be a bylaw written in the bylaws until we have the framework of interpretation. So that's where it stands. And again, I'm not sure we should be debating this specific subject here, but I will honor the call, the hands up. Tijani, you're next.
Thank you very much, Alan. Tijani speaking. I will give another rationale, another reason why I believe that we don't have to have this interim report, the interim bylaw. You remember very well that when we transferred more or less a lot of power from the board to the community in our proposal, the question was raised. Yes, we want the board to be accountable, but to whom you are accountable? You. Where are the mechanisms of accountability of the community? And we said, you are right. We will address it in workstream too. And we said that in our reports, in our third report. But we didn't make an interim bylaw. Someone can explain me why? I believe that it is much more important than the human rights obligations, because the whole issue is about accountability. And if we give power to people or to group who is not accountable or for him, there is no accountability mechanism, the whole system will be down. So I think that there is something behind trying to put a commitment to human rights in the bylaw now. I don't know what is this, but I feel, and I have a real fear about it. That's why I don't like to have anything in the bylaw And if we are obliged, if of course the forces will be those who will win, and perhaps I don't have the right force. But if we are obliged to include something, we have to do it as Leon now said, or as you explained, Alan, the whole bylaw will be dormant till we define the interpretation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Trajani. First of all, I'll caution people not to presume a motivation for people saying things. I personally reject, I object strenuously when someone tells me I said something because and gives me the reason why they think I said it when that had nothing to do with it, and I would not attribute motivations to why people feel strongly that there should be a human rights bylaw. Are there people in the CCWG right now who are probably doing things for ulterior motives that they don't want to talk about? Sure. But I think we need an agreement that we don't talk about them because they're not something that we can demonstrate or prove. My personal position is...
I speak about that among us. Yes.
I understand. But I'm saying even among us, I think we need to be very careful. I personally would object to a bylaw that is in effect before the framework of interpretation. I don't think we're talking about that now, but we'll wait to see what Leon's words are when they're published, and then we can have the substantive discussion on whether we agree or not. Avery, go ahead.
Thank you. Avery speaking. I couldn't disagree more with Johnny. I don't think I disagree with him more. And I'm not even totally comfortable with the wording. I think that I can...
Avery, you're breaking up
badly. ...for IRP.
Avery, you're...
Sorry. Well, I'll try again, but otherwise I guess we can just ignore what I have to say. The difference between saying that ICANN has respect for human rights and thus considers them in creating a framework of interpretation, considers them and their implications when doing PDPs. That's very different than saying they have now become a cause for action in an IRP or a court. So I think it's absolutely essential, given a loss of governmental oversight, because only governments have obligations to human rights. ICANN has none. And so I think it would be an incredible mistake and something that I and many of us would fight tooth and nail of going out with a accountability solution that is not based on a respect for human rights. It's fine for Tajani to say, I have ulterior motives. I do. I want ICANN to respect human rights in its discussions, in its behavior, and such. And I want human rights to not be something that every time it's brought up, people say, but ICANN doesn't do human rights. What, you're talking about the right for clean water? And so I think that if we're going to be creating a framework of interpretation, we have to do it from the basis of respect for human rights. Yes, we have to understand how they fit with our mission. So, and I'm not, you know, arguing the specifics of it. I'm fine with Tajani indicating that I have ulterior motives, because I do. Respect for human rights is fundamental to accountability, and without it, we have none. Thanks.
Thank you. Olivier, I'm going to ask you as chair. I would really like to stop the discussion on the substance of human rights issues. This was an update on where the CCWG is. We have a half hour left in our call and some really other substantive issues to talk about. So with your agreement, I will say that we will not entertain more comments on the human rights issue, on the substance of it. when we have something specifically to answer on behalf of the CCWG, then we can have that discussion and we can take a vote if necessary. Ultimately, it would have to go to the ALAC for that vote, however. And I'd like to go on to the next item. The next item is strengthening ICANN's IRP. We had reviews about, we had concerns, we expressed concerns about conflicting panel decisions that is now removed from the IRP, and I think that there's general acceptance. I know Sebastian would like to raise the issue of the IRP in general, and that's an item to be that's added after the review is complete. 8 is reviewing ICANN's request for improving the request for reconsideration process. We had no concerns on that, nor has virtually anyone. Affirmation of commitments in the bylaws. There was basically no complaint about that. There was a request from the board and other people that the reviews not be incorporated in the bylaws. I could certainly have lived with that. I don't think we've ever discussed it formally. At this point, that was rejected, I believe, by the CCWG, so it's off the table. It might come back again, of course. Recommendation number 10 is enhancing accountability. The comment is in the wrong place. This was a comment on the AOC, in fact. There was a request from certain parties within the GNSO to increase the allocation of members on review committees to the GNSO for any review committee associated with GNSO policy, and that would be the CCT one, the WHOIS one in particular. That was rejected, but I will note that effectively that is already there. The typical review team size that we've seen in the past has been 11 to 13 members. The current process allows 21, and that's before experts are added, and the provisions now allow for participants, similar to the CCWG, who will be on an equal footing, although not travel-funded. I believe the review teams have become exceedingly bloated and will not be effective vehicles for doing the work. But be that as it may, that is in the recommendation. And with the decision being made on who to select by the chairs of the ACs and SOs, I cannot see a chair of the GNSO, if there are slots that are possibly available within the 21, not pushing hard for every one of their groups to be represented. So I think they already have that. But in any case, it is what it is right now. I think we're going to have significant problems with the AOCs, with the AOC reviews in the future because of the composition of the members. Sebastian.
Yeah, Sebastian Bachelet, I agree with you, Alan, and I really think that we are putting things more and more complicated in this organization. I know that people were hating to have the chair of the board and the chair of the GAC for the ATRT and the CEO and the chair of the GAC for the other review doing the final selection. But we at the level of the SO and ACs, some SO and AC were not doing their job to select select the people and then to leave the choice for the final decision to have a balanced group. And we are really entering into politics, and you will, as chair, be part of the decision, and you will not be independent to make the final selection. That's really a wrong way to go. And unfortunately, there are so much things in this report were complexifying everything that I am very, very sorry that it's going in that direction. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. I may not be chair of the ALAC when this bylaw goes into effect. So I'm not sure I'll have the decision. Some ALEC chair will. Certainly past ALEC chairs, and I think I count myself among them, would make hard decisions and tell the ALEC, no, we're not having five members just because we could. We don't really need five members. I find it very hard to believe a GNSO chair will be able to do that. GNSO chairs explicitly have very little discretion. But we'll see what happens. I tried to fight that, and there wasn't a lot of other people supporting it, so it died, but we'll see where it goes. Okay, 11 is stress to what was called stress test 18. It is still under discussion. The GAC has not formally spoken. There was a decision to tentatively add a bylaw saying any advisory committee, and that's not specific to the GAC, if they provide formal advice to the board, must provide a rationale. I certainly have no trouble with that, and rationale is spelt wrong on the slide. Questions, comments? Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Capanablanc speaking. And it's worth noting that the proposed response of the GNSO for Recommendation 11 is actually strong opposition to this. So that might be a deal breaker for the GNSO Council. The GNSO overall does not support this recommendation. Most stakeholder groups and constituencies do not support the proposal to raise the threshold for a board vote to reject GAC advice. And there's more explanation underneath that. But that could be something that comes back in the face of the working group.
Yep. And that is indeed correct. The if the GNSO votes on this recommendation by recommendation, and they are the only ACSO to reject that particular one, then the charter of the CCWG says things can go forward. So that may not be as bad as it sounds. The GNSO objection was on two counts. Number one, changing the threshold to two-thirds when there was not community input, which is similar to rejecting a GNSO PDP recommendation, but on a GAC advice, the people were saying that there is not the community input into the recommendation as there is into the advice as there is on GNSO recommendations. They were also objecting strenuously, or some groups, to the concept that we're introducing voting. That, I personally believe, is a red herring. The chair of the board has confirmed that the only time GAC advice is ever rejected, it was by a formal vote. The bylaw did not say vote, but the bylaw said the board has to act, and the only way the board can formally act is through a vote. So I think that's a red herring. But Olivia is right, and it may well turn out the GNSO rejects that recommendation. And I think we'll just have to see where the world goes.
Alan, if I can just add to this, this is a letter. What I'm referring to is really a response that the GNSO is going to send to the working group. I don't quite know how that will be dealt with, because this doesn't look to me like this is the final response in voting and whatever. This is a comment, very much like the kind of comments we did over, you know, the ALAC sent during the public commenting period months ago.
Yes, you're correct, Olivier.
So would something like this get the working group to have to look at it again?
I don't believe so. Okay. I'm giving you an opinion. We could spend 20 minutes debating it if you wish, but I don't think so. Sean, go ahead, but briefly, we're running out of time, and we really have other issues to discuss. Go ahead, Sean.
Okay, thank you. This is Sean. I just like to get a clarification on what you said about the charter. You just said that if one of the recommendations is not approved by, is rejected by one of the SC also the church mobilization, that the proposal, the recommendation goes to the next level. That is, the recommendation will be part of the proposal. Does it? I thought the charter is actually referring to the old proposal itself and not recommendation by recommendation. Thank you.
Yeah, we talked about that at the last meeting. My belief is, and it's supported by some people, that the charter will be liberally interpreted, that just as the proposal right now lists his recommendations one by one, that and just as the GNSO in PDPs approves recommendations one by one at times, that we will judge them one by one. I agree that is not exactly what the charter says, and I may prove to be wrong that the CCWG as a group does not agree to do that. But my current belief is it will. And if I'm wrong, I will admit I'm wrong. So be it. Just one quick comment. Avery in the discussion with regard to the AOC reviews says GNSO chairs have almost no discretion. That is correct as the chair, but if the person occupying the chair is given a role, that person can exercise discretion not on behalf of the GNSO, but as the person who happens to occupy the chair. So there's a subtle difference there, and a GNSO chair might choose to interpret it that way, but that would be up to the GNSO chair to interpret that way. So in any case, stress test 18 is under discussion, and where it exactly will be going is not clear. It's clear the NTIA will not accept anything without something comparable to what they are requesting. And the last recommendation is on Workstream 2. There is still some, is still under discussion. The board has suggested that perhaps the CCWG as such may not be the vehicle for doing things. That resulted in responses from a number of CCWG members saying yes, but the CCWG has certain authority to do things. Another follow-on group might not, and clearly another follow-on group would have to be given the appropriate authority to take some of these actions. But that is still under discussion, and we'll see where that goes. And that is where it stands in the review. The timeline is unclear. We are still waiting for the formal responses from the GNSO. As we hear, that may be coming soon, and the GAC. There is clearly an impact on transition if we cannot deliver something soon. Perhaps it's already too late. And we expect to have something for the ALAC to consider either prior to Marrakesh or in Marrakesh. And at the request of a number of people, a new frantic font. Or frazzled font. Any questions? Comments?
Yeah. Sure.
Go ahead. Whoever said yeah.
Thank you, Alan. This is Sean for the record. You just mentioned that the timeline is not clear yet, and I'm really, really concerned about this process, about the fact that just a few SOs, a few part of the community actually doing this process. If I recall correctly, I think it was said that the GNSO statement will be out by 14th of this month. Was there any follow-up from GNSO on that particular statement on why their statement was not out by 14th? And when are we expecting their statement? And if their statement does not come in time, is the CCWG thinking of what to actually do to move forward? This is long overdue, and I'm concerned that this statement that is being delayed will actually affect the entire process itself and waste all the energy of the other SOs that have actually, ACLS, that have actually spent their time in making their own submissions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. We have all expressed our concern. With regarding the GNSO, you've heard Olivier say that he has received a draft version, I presume it's a draft version, Olivier, of the final document, or just one word, is this a draft or the version to be sent to the CCWG? Olivier?
Thank you, Alan Olivier. Thank you, Alan Olivier, Captain Leblanc speaking. This is a draft which has been sent so as to be able to discuss it on tomorrow's GNSO Council call.
Okay, thank you.
And
so, thank Sean, you've heard there is a draft. It will be discussed on the Council call. Presumably something will be sent afterwards, sometime soon afterwards, to the CCWG. I'm not going to have a discussion in this call as to why the GNSO couldn't act quicker. They clearly haven't, and that's the reality that we have to deal with today. I'd like to bring the summary to a close at this point and go on to the other items, because Sebastian has made a specific request, and we're down to 15 minutes. Yes, Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. Just noting one thing. It is worth noting that GAC has not responded either, so it's not just the GNSO.
That is clear. All right. There are a number of items on the I'm trying to find them here. On human rights, I think we've had about as much discussion as we're going to have on this call. Consumer trust and confidence, I think we have also closed that. Should we be having a face-to-face meeting? I think we discussed that at length in our last meeting. Until we have something to discuss at the face-to-face meeting and know when that is, there's no point in us requesting and starting to travel arrangements for a face-to-face meeting. I find it highly unlikely that when we do have something to discuss, there will be enough time to arrange a face-to-face meeting before Marrakesh. So I think that one is a dead issue at this point. We can discuss it more, but we have no credibility to ask for a meeting of the ALAC until we have something to discuss, and at this point we don't know when that's coming out. So I would like to say that there's nothing we can do there. Workstream 2 organization and budget, I think we've already discussed at this point that if there is a separation from the CCWG, then clearly we have to consider things like who does it and is there budget to handle face-to-face meetings and provide staff support for them and things like that. So I think that's an implicit part of the of a decision to handle it other than the CCWG. Personally, I think the CCWG is going to have to be revitalized in a number of ways if it's going to go ahead at all. The amount of burnout is substantial at this point, I think. And lastly, there is an item on IRP versus multi-stakeholderism, and that's an issue introduced by Sebastian, and I'd like to turn it over to Sebastian to state what he believes is his concerns.
Thank you, Alan. In fact, the three last item was I asked for this discussion last time. I was not able to be with you during the discussion. I just want to give a few words on the two first one and then to the last one. Face-to-face, you remember, I am very in favor of that. I know that we don't have yet the document, but put any trouble for the board to have a face-to-face meeting beginning of February, and I guess they will discuss that at length. And I have written in the private mail, because it was asked to be a answer, that yes, I am ready to have a face-to-face meeting, and I would suggest to do it near by the board. If we do that, we can show some leading to the rest of the community, because I really think that at the end of the day, we will have to have a final negotiation with the board. I hope that we can wait for Marrakesh, but I think that Marrakesh, except if we ask that the U.S. election be postponed, will be already very late. Workstream 2, I really think that the proposal by the board to split Workstream 2 into different subgroup with less power, less budget, less possibility to work, it's we need to have as a community the choice for the organization of what we want to do, and the Workstream 2 must be organized as a global topic. One of the reasons is that when we discuss about one subject, we can be convinced to change another subject. I will say that it could lead to some bargaining. If we are in different work groups, we will not be able to do anything like that, and it will be difficult to have our voice taken into account if we split too much the work in different streams. IRP versus multi-stakeholder, I know that it was quite difficult to understand the title. My question it's and trouble is that if we need to have an IRP against bylaw changes by the board after a decision by an SO on the policy issue, if we need to have this SO participating, that means that they need to disagree with themselves. If we, in fact, my thinking is that the multi-stakeholder, the organization of ICANN, shows that it could be done in one organization and the other disagree with, then those organizations need to have some weapon. And one of the weapons is the IRP. Then I really don't see why the GNSO, the CCNSO, or the ISO need to be part of this IRP if we want, if some other want to change the decision by the board taken after the policy decision of those SO. I hope that it's clear. If it's not, I will try to do my best to change my wording, but that's my comment and question. Thank you.
Okay. Let me try to address my understanding of the last item, and then we can open the discussion. The issue came up that if we allow an IRP to effectively, remember, IRPs can only rule on that we are in violation of our bylaws. They cannot rule on anything more specific, and they cannot say what the solution is. They can simply say we have a problem. That's equivalent to what the U.S. Supreme Court does. The problem was that if there are bylaw changes as a result of a PDP, which there rarely are, then if we allow the community to overrule the recommendations, then we are essentially saying the bottom-up process is not sacred, and we have essentially a constitutional crisis that which process is more important. I don't think it's a major issue from my point of view, because the situation doesn't happen very often that there are in fact bylaw changes due to a PDP. Maybe never happened, I'm not sure. And I agree that we should not be able to reverse this process by the community without the consent. Now, the consent of the SO that recommended the changes essentially is saying they either have rethought things because the situation has changed, or they believe the implementation was so ill-advised that it has mangled their recommendation. So I don't think it's a big issue, and I can see the rationale for it. You know, I could go both ways on it. I don't find it a really big issue, but that's just me. Tijani?
Thank you, Alan. Tijani speaking. I would like to remind you that the CCWG is tasked, as per its charter, to work on the whole issue of accountability, including Extreme 1 and Extreme 2. In fact, the CCWG has a work, and it decided to split it in two parts, Extreme 1 and Extreme 2. So now, we cannot change this unless the chartering organization agree to change the charter. Or the CCWG, if the CCWG feels that it doesn't have the necessary bandwidth or the necessary energy to continue for Workstream 2, they can propose to chartering organization to change the charter so that they will be replaced by other things. Subdivision of the CCWG in several groups is not a good idea for me, from my point of view. A lot of implication on that. It is more or less a kind of weaken the group. But I believe that we have to stand by the charter, and we have to make it clear that if there is a need to change that, we need to go through the chartering organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. I don't think anyone's disagreeing with you on that. When we've talked about dividing the work, I don't think there's been any discussion on the process we would need to go through to do that. And I tend to agree. If the chartering organizations are against it, then we have a problem. Whether that's a reasonable thing to do or not is a different discussion from the process to be followed if it is to be done. So I think we're all in agreement on that part. Whether we're in agreement on should we divide the task or not, following some due process, that we may disagree on. Any other issue on the any discussion on the substantive issue that Sebastian has raised on should there be a carve out for PDP recommendations being subject to an IRP? Does no comment mean you're agreeing with Sebastian or disagreeing with it? It really would be useful to have some feedback. Maybe at least from the people on this call, a tick saying you agree with Sebastian, a cross saying you don't agree with him. Sean, you want to speak? Go ahead. I note we're out of time in 5 minutes, and we have to turn this back to Olivier at some point, so please be brief.
Yeah, I don't agree with the PDP outcome to be subject to RIP. Thank you.
You don't agree they should be subject to it, or that they should be a carve-out?
What does a carve-out mean, please?
Sorry, you're not clear. Are you agreeing with Sebastian that there's a problem, or are you agreeing with the CCWG that there should be a carve-out?
He is asking what means carve-out.
Ah, sorry.
Yes.
What is carve-out?
Carve-out means that there are certain types of bylaw changes which are not going to be subject to an IRP.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So I agree that they should not be subject to carve-outs. Yeah.
Okay, so you're disagreeing with Sebastian. Okay.
Yes.
I think we're somewhat mixed on this, so I think we're each going to have to present our own cases and see where it goes at this point. Olivier, seeing no hands at this point, before anyone puts one up, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Olivier Clapin-Ablon speaking. And thanks for going through this. Now, we have 4 minutes until the end of the call. We have finished the main agenda. We have now just any other business. And as per usual in the any other business part of this call, we have to check whether we need another call later on this week. I believe there is a date that has been earmarked, which is on Friday. It's held at the moment. So do we require... a call. Is it on Friday? I don't even have it. Yes, here we go. Friday, 1700 UTC. So we need another call. Sebastian, you put your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Olivier. My question is, what will happen in between? I have the impression that we have a CCWG tomorrow, and you will have some GNSO discussion. Then maybe at least it will be good to have feedback of those two calls and to see where we are at that moment. And I suggest to have it.
Okay, thanks for this, Sebastian. It's Olivier speaking. We have a CWG IANA meeting at 1600 UTC tomorrow. There is also a GNSO Council monthly call at 2100 UTC. And I don't know, did you say there was also a CCWG accountability call as well?
There is one tomorrow, yes.
Okay, Alan. So, I gather we need to have that call then on Friday. So our next call will be Friday, 1700 UTC for 90 minutes. And should we already set a doodle for next week, perhaps?
Yeah, Leon, are you still on the call? Okay, Leon, maybe Cheryl has your hand up. What I was going to ask Leon is, are there CCWG meetings scheduled for the week after? I think this week's ones were the last ones that had been scheduled. So, Cheryl, maybe you know the answer to that. Go ahead.
We will be having calls in the following week because of the timing of the GNSO letter. Now we hope it'll get from our box through the process and eventually to CCWG. And also that, our intention is to have things wrapped up by the 28th so we can then move to the next phase. But we will see how we go on that. Just wanted, with that particular timing for that, it may be that Leon and I will not be able to join for the first hour because we have a meeting on for the CCWG administration at that same time. So that's all.
Would you prefer if we try to change the time, Cheryl?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Fine. We'll talk before. Are there meetings scheduled for next week at this point?
Yes. This is Sean. There is.
Yes.
Okay, fine. I hadn't seen them, but that's fine. Okay. So the meeting for Friday is on, and on Friday we'll discuss what we do. We'll probably schedule one again, put a doodle out for another meeting on the following Wednesday and Friday. This time we'll try to avoid administration meetings if we can. Sebastian, your hand is up.
Yeah, it was just to tell you that it's scheduled at 19 UTC on Tuesday and Thursday next week.
Okay, thank you.
The CCWG.
Okay, well, thanks very much, everyone. We know where we're going, and we will all continue on Friday this week. Until then, have some rest, get ready for more conference calls, and speak to you all soon. This call is now adjourned. Thanks very much.
Thank you,
Goodbye.
Olivier.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. The meeting has been adjourned and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you for joining today's call and watch out for the doodles coming your way.